Okay, this class is going to be about the solar angel. Does anyone know what a solar angel is? Very few people know exactly what it is. Michael's read about the solar angel before. What do you know about the solar angel?
I would say it's synonymous with soul.
Okay. Just about synonymous.
Synonymous.
Soul. It's often used, the soul and solar angel are often used to be the same thing. It's a little bit different, though, because D.K. tells us something really interesting that a lot of LSA Bailey readers have missed, and that is that after the fourth initiation, they say the solar angels return from whence they came. Does that mean that we don't have a soul anymore? What does that mean? Where did the solar angels come from? The solar angels came from a past universe. In other words, this isn't the first Earth. This isn't the first solar system. This isn't the first universe. Universes and solar systems have been born and reborn again and again many, many different times. And those entities, which are called solar angels, came from a past universe where they were perfected human beings like ourselves. They went through everything that we've gone through, and they achieved perfection. And their residence before they came to assist us was the sun. That's why they're called solar angels. Now, there's life everywhere in this solar system. For instance, on Venus, we send spacecraft there. It looks like a total hell. But actually, there's different levels of matter on each of the worlds. There's seven levels of matter in the etheric physical level alone. There's solid matter, there's liquid matter, there's gaseous, and then there's what they call the fourth ether, and then the third ether, and all these higher ethers are invisible to us. But we can see the what is called the fourth ether, and I give everybody this exercise regularly. You can look between your thumbs like this, hold them up against a flat surface on a wall, put your thumbs together, pull them slowly apart, and look at the empty space right in between. Look at the empty space, and you will see out of the corner of your eyes a film that stretches out about a millimeter or two from your skin. That film is your etheric body made of the fourth ether. Okay, and it has the same shape as your physical body. Some people call this the spiritual body. It was funny, when I was way back in the Mormon church a lifetime ago, I was teaching a seminary class, and I showed them how to do that. I said, "You guys want to see your spirit?" They says, "Yeah." So I showed them how to do that, and I showed them several exercises. And boy, they thought that was the coolest thing they'd ever seen. Everybody was able to see their spirit. And then about 3 days later, I got released from my job. They went home and told their parents, "Hey, Elder Dewey showed us how to see that spirit." And it freaked the parents out. But anyway, then there's higher ethers that are more difficult to see. And then above this is the emotional matter, and above this is the mental, and then above that is the formless worlds. So these solar angels are actually from the sun, and the sun has life in it. But matter of fact, everywhere there's form of any kind, there's life. There's life everywhere. And the more concrete the form is, the more distant from spirit is the life in the form. You'd pick just a rock, for example. A rock is teeming with life inside of it, but it's very concretized. It is spirit slowed way down. It is disturbed to the point that the little lives in it haven't adjusted very well to spirit. Consequently, they're dense. And so the elements that produce dense matter that we can't go through are the densest of all. And they're they're vibrating at the slowest. Then we get to water. We got water in our cups and things, and you can actually swim through water. Unlike hard matter, you can't put your hand through it. But you can put your hand through water. You can put your hand through air. And then we get to the higher ethers that science doesn't yet recognize. You know, we can really buzz through them if we want. And the higher we get, the more flexible is the life that lives in the higher ethers. Well, these solar angels are actually from the sun. And when man first began to develop here upon the earth, when life began to evolve and human-type life began to manifest, they manifested, grew very slowly. And it appeared that their evolution was going to be tremendously slow and painful. So the solar angels decided to come and assist us. And so when they came to assist us, they overshadowed our own souls. And by our own souls, and then in the spirit world, these solar angels gave birth to our souls and merged with them or overshadowed them. So the solar angels actually overshadow the higher part of ourselves. So the higher part of ourselves can see through the eyes of the solar angel. And in seeing through the eyes of the solar angel, the higher part of ourselves is a master on its own plane. So you are connected to a higher part of yourself, which is as intelligent as if you were to meet somebody like Jesus showing up. This is why almost everybody, when they have a near-death experience, they meet the person who they esteem as God or a Messiah or a Buddha or something like that. They will often meet somebody very high. What this is merely the higher part of their self manifesting as an essence to them that they will respect as the highest they know. So not everybody has a near-death experience and thinks they meet Jesus, really met Jesus, but they really met their solar angel. So we have this higher part of ourselves that is in meditation deep. And in meditation deep, it attempts to commune with its reflection. And who's its reflection? Its reflection is us. And we are a dim reflection of the essence who reflected us. And what our higher self or our soul or our soul or our solar angel is waiting for, it's waiting for us to develop enough to the point to where the soul can have an intelligent communion with us. So when we were younger and we went to church, we were told that God hears and sees everything that we do. So is this true? And if it is true, how does this happen? And this is one of the reasons a lot of people are kind of anti-God, is they have a hard time thinking of some God up on a throne. Keeping track of everybody's thoughts, 7 billion people at one time on this world, and there may be billions of other worlds too. So he's keeping track of all these people's thoughts, what they're thinking and whether they're naughty and nice. It's a little bit like Santa Claus, you know. When you're a kid and people tell you about Santa Claus, you really believe it at first. And then you start thinking, well, how in the world does Santa Claus get to see so many people? You know, there's billions of kids in the world. And how does he make time to see them all? Secondly, how does he bring that many presents with him? I mean, he's just got one sleigh. How does he stick all those presents in one sleigh for billions of kids? So these kids, they start thinking. And then their parents come up with kind of weird explanations. I mean, how does he get down the chimney? Well, he can kind of compress time and space. And he's got this special sleigh that you can just put anything into. And they come up with all these word things, and it kind of halfway satisfies them for a while, and then pretty soon awareness overcomes the illusion, and they say, you know, Santa Claus really couldn't do all this stuff. Give me the real data on what Santa Claus really is. And finally the parent breaks down. Okay, it's no Santa Claus, you know. The real Santa Claus is me and your mom, you know, or me and your dad. And so, that makes sense. So in other words, Santa Claus gets around and sees everybody because moms and dads all throughout the world are his agents. And being the arms and hands of Santa Claus, they're able to get presents to all the boys and girls in the world. And that's how it works.